Hello, I'm Alex Hirsch, and I once locked a child in pool jail.
Hey, I'm Mike Aranda. I was the creative director on this episode.
Hi, and I'm Matt Chapman. I did the voice of Mermando.
Also a writer on Gravity Falls.
Say, I'm gonna throw this pig out of the house! You called my bluff, pig.
On the bright side, pun very much intended.
This is, we've talked in some of the other commentaries about how the second half of the season, we were a little bit behind, and we were trying to make sort of simpler sitcom-ier stories just because they seemed easier.
Yeah.
And we were
a little burnt out.
We were a little burnt out. This actually, the genesis of this entire episode, I have to give credit to storyboard artist Eric Fountain, because he was one of our artists, really funny guy, and he did this drawing of two, like, merman brothers that said, Mermanos.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it was just so funny to me. I don't know. Something about that cracked me up, and I had, like, Mermano, Mermando in the back of my head for a long time, and when we needed an episode, I'm just like, all right, we're doing a pool episode. His name is Mermando. Yeah. Mabel's got a crush. Everybody, go. And it proved to be a surprisingly difficult episode to write. Mike, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, this certain episodes I have this, like, you know, I don't know. I've never worked harder on an episode and had it, like, kind of stay in the same realm of quality. But no, it turned out well, but because we really pushed it in, like, the last half to make every joke as funny as we could be in sort of, like, right at the end, but sort of, like, we wanted it to be an A, and it was kind of hanging out in the B range, you know.
I rewrote this whole opening, and you can tell when I've rewritten an opening because it involves a character saying, "Ah, the pool," or "Here we have the bottomless pit," or "Ah, Summerween." Like, I always do the same thing where I'm like, okay, we need to establish what the episode's about. A character's going to introduce it, have a little joke, and then we're going to continue. And I was, like, rewatching these. I was like, I really go to that well a lot.
I noticed it.
I think what was difficult about this episode was, you know, we often try to have big adventure, and this is one, you know, our writer, she turned in a draft and had a lot of good jokes in it. But I think the thing we were bumping up against was there's not a lot of story in this episode.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that got me about it, is it always felt really low stakes. Like, it was like, how can I care about this episode? So we kept trying to inject stuff like, oh, maybe Dipper's having a good time with Wendy, but it's not, you know, it's not about their relationship. It's just them being friends. Maybe that will help.
We had to layer it on. It's like, if you got a thin A story, you got to layer on B story, C story, D story. So we're like, we've got a thread with Dipper and Wendy. We've got a thread with Seuss and Gideon. We've got a thread with Seuss believing inflatable pool animals are alive.
Yeah.
anything that we could do to kind of juice this up. Mermando was a particularly tricky character to find the tone on him, because he's such a broad kind of jokey concept that we're hinging this whole episode on, and Mabel sort of got a crush on him, and we have to care. And I think Matt really made this character somebody more lovable.
Yeah.
Oh, shush. I think we had to re-record his voice like three or maybe four times, I think, to try and figure it out. The first one was, like, way too deep, just, like, romantic, like, deep, like, oh, Mabel, you are so forward.
A little, like, bit more Strong Bad.
Well, no, the reason why is we showed it, and it was, like, way gross. He's like, hello, Mabel. And it's like, is this a 50-year-old man? What's happening right now?
Well, and that's why we added this. There's a joke in here where he says, I am 12 years old. We had to add that because, like, I do remember there was a little bit of pushback from some of the network being like, why do we have this adult man being this, like, 12-year-old boy? But, like, your voice is, like, there's this sensitivity to, like, he comes off as really sweet and likable.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, well, I'm glad. I always felt like you were, like, throwing me a bone. Like, I was like, they're going to change this at the last second. And when it wasn't until it aired that I was like, wow, they really kept me in there. I kind of can't believe they kept me in there.
Well, all your training paid off. Your you know, the training montage you went through, you know, swimming in the ocean.
Yeah, Matt did a lot of shirtless swimming in the ocean to get ready for this role. Hey, speaking of voice roles, who's the voice of Mr. Poolcheck here? Who's this sassy customer?
Hey, it's Michael Rianda, everyone's favorite. Kids are cheering at home right now. Yeah, finally.
So you may not be able to tell this from his dulcet tones on this recording, but Mike is kind of a psychopath, and like nobody I know can scream louder than Mike.
That's right.
And so we were having trouble casting this character, and Mike would always pitch him, well, the way you hear him here, and finally was like, let's just get Mike to do it.
Just scream. Well, and the tragic thing about this is the first person who did this voice was Will Forte, who is a hilarious comedic actor.
He's a genius.
10 times funnier than me, but his voice was so high, he was like, I'm Mr. Poolcheck, that it wasn't as scary as it needed to be.
Well, and he also sounded a little bit, he's the voice of Cute Biker, and there's this scene where you see the two of them in a row, and it was I can't believe we're replacing Will Forte, genius comedian,
with
Mike over here. But no, Mike's hilarious, did a fantastic job. This read right here, let's all listen. That's the loudest I've ever screamed in my life. I still feel the scratch track we did of that. Get out of that! Like, it was so insane.
I think it was like you kept doing it louder and I kept laughing harder, and it was like so late that we were just trying to like make something work for ourselves.
Well, because this is just sort of, it's such a thin, hacky, Stan wants Gideon's chair. So if Stan's going to react, the only way I could make it like land for myself is that I'm making fun of the, I'm going to sit on this chair now.
Yeah.
What? Like, I had to like really push it. This amazing gag by Aaron Springer, the co-director of this episode. Whenever you see like weird buff men contorting themselves into shape, you can guess that it's Aaron Springer.
Yeah, Aaron Springer is like the funniest drawer that has ever lived in the world. Like those storyboard panels for that section, like make me laugh harder than like anything.
They're really good. This joke, Mike, do you remember who came up with the kid in pool jail?
I don't.
Is that me? Was that you?
Kid who came in pool jail.
This is one of those.
I think it might have been like partially the board artist or something. Like the kid was in the background and like a board, and then we thought it was funny.
That might have been Eric Fountain. I know Eric Fountain worked on it.
Yeah. That seems like an Eric Fountain bit.
That's one of those gags that was just something small on the board, and that people. I feel like that gag has outlasted this episode. Like, out of all the things, people are still asking me like, what happened to that kid? Is he still trapped in that pool?
That's what they were disappointed when he didn't come back in the three episode season, series finale. That they were like, wait, the pool jail kid didn't get his like comeuppance at the end of the show?
Yeah, he's got a tumbler. There's a kid with a pool jail kid tumbler.
I did see somebody at a convention. I saw a photo. They dressed as pool jail kid.
That is amazing.
Built a PVC pipe jail that they were holding, and they were looking sad. I guarantee nobody got the reference, but we did. So
we got it. We're like, thank you. Thank you for justifying our hard work, you delightful child.
Well, what's the song that plays at the end of the episode? Is that still the like button at the end of the whole thing?
It is the button, and that was I got to give credit. It'll be at the end of the episode, but that long crosses all with Pool Jail Kid like in the jail through the seasons. That was all supported by Eric Fountain, hilarious artist, and like I think we had something like Everybody Hurts or something like in the scratch track. We had to get something royalty free, but we leaned into it. This whole sequence was boarded really well.
Yeah, this is David Gemmel, and he posed out every part of like this fall that's about to happen.
Gemmel. This fall too. I remember this fall took a long time to finally get all these things correct. The sounds for him, and in addition to giggling, I think I got a little too creepy when he was getting licked by all the deer. There were a few takes. Was like, Chapman, you got to dial that back. He's enjoying this way too much.
That little line you slip in there, continue licking. That's one of my favorite lines in the entire thing.
I think I tried to fit twice in there, which I think one of the several times boys maybe also says when he's kissing the tree. I was just trying to make any time someone's enjoying something, it's a little creepy. I just say the word twice.
David Gemmel did a lot of great boards on this episode. He's also sort of Wendy, like fun-loving swimsuit Wendy, was all boarded by Gemmel, and in his original board, I think She wasn't wearing a one piece, and the network had a major problem with that. This line also, I gotta say, you know, even though this episode wasn't our high stakes adventure, like this right here.
Yes, burn the child.
Burn the child always cracks me up.
We were just like, just deliriously laughing on the couch together like idiots while the editor was just like sighing deeply, wondering why he's like part of our sort of horrible fever dream.
Nort!
My people have been enslaved, Zeus. You must free us.
The inflatable pool duck revolution is at hand.
Pool's closed and clear out, everyone!
Oh, one thing about this episode, I think one thing that made it a little bit more successful is because, like, one thing about Alex is that he's got, like, I was kind of like, you know what? Let's just leave this episode for dead. and Alex is like, no, we have to save it. So he was like, I remember, like, way late in the process, we were trying to figure out a way to give it just a tiny bit more stakes, and we came up with this idea that it was Mabel's first kiss. And then it made the episode a little bit more effective because you kind of cared a little bit. You're like, oh, she's sad. She's never had her first kiss before. Maybe this could be it. So it gave you something to root for throughout the episode. Whereas before, it was just sort of like it was stakesless.
It was another crush of the week. We had to differentiate it from the crushes that had come before.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like one of my kind of theories. Like, anyone feel free to steal this because it's pretty easy. Like, one of my theories about how you make a piece of entertainment feel like valuable, like feel like you enjoyed it, like your time wasn't wasted, is that just some you learn either learn something new about these characters you've never learned before, even the smallest thing, even like, oh, here's this character's middle name, or they dye their hair, or just anything. You either learn something new about them, or something new happened to them that represents some even very small milestone for them.
Yeah.
And because even if your character arcs within the course of the episode, you want to feel like they took something away, that next week they now have something that they took with them. So little things like that, like this is Mabel's first kiss, were kind of things that I would try to add to make a very kind of thin story feel like it had a little bit meat to it. This yelling, Matt, so good.
That was amazing.
We laughed so hard in the editing room when we were putting that together. We had you do a lot of screaming, didn't we?
Yeah, there was a good bit of screaming. There's especially, I feel like I just became scream loud guy sort of towards the end. I think there's a lot of screaming I did in the end episodes of the season as well. It was always a fun part of doing records for you, Alex.
I'm so sorry. Well, I had to learn, you know, me and Mike came into this with very little experience and quickly learned that making voice actors scream multiple times at the top of their lungs is the greatest way to get talented people to hate you. So we would try to save the screams till the end of the record.
Yeah.
Like, save them all. And I'd try to have them do one or two takes rather than three or four takes if possible.
Yeah, totally.
Because that stuff is a nightmare.
I love what you're talking about with the first kiss, too, is that was fun, too, because we got to call back to all that later when there's the reference in later episodes to Mermando. And doesn't Dipper make some comment about how he's a terrible kisser even later on?
Like, yeah, yeah.
We got to call back to this stuff.
I think he makes a joke about, like, how it was his first kiss and he prefers not to think. Well, I remember there's a line in Sock Opera, which always got a laugh when we pitch it in the room, where Mabel's talking about Mermando and Dipper says, oh, right, Mermando did not care for Mermando. Just like mutters that to himself while he's like flipping through a book, because like clearly he's remembering. That's partially Dipper remembering this and partially like me remembering like what a hard episode this was.
Yeah, and watching it, I don't think it was a bad episode.
No,
I just
it's
think
funny.
It was just hard to write, you know.
Well, I think again, probably for me the hardest thing to write about this was, I think in our early drafts, and I totally blame myself because I didn't catch this when we were breaking the story, but you know your episode's in trouble when your first two act breaks are the same plot point.
Yeah.
Originally, it was Mabel meets Mermando. The first act break is, I'm lonely, I want to leave. And then the second act break is, I still want to leave.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, that is 21 minutes of nothing.
Yeah, so it just means the middle of your episode is just a giant double beat.
Is nothing happening. So I moved it so that she learns he's a merman at the end of act one. And at the end of act two, like, it's the, you know, we're getting out of here to try to...
Yeah.
Butts it a little bit.
And that's one thing that I like super credit Alex for in terms of this whole show, where it's like he just wouldn't let this stuff be bad. Or like if we had a week, he was going to spend every minute of that week trying to make it better. And it was super nice, you know, as an employee to just like work on a show where your boss wouldn't let anything be bad ever.
Oh, and it was nice to have somebody like Mike who was like, yeah, I will spend this entire weekend adding, like, us working so hard to think of three extra fish jokes.
And we got them, baby.
And we did it.
Maybe.
Yeah, that one, that's like maybe my favorite is that like errant flap that he does, like when it's like total, you know, that's just that fish thing. That like fish thing they do. They come on the deck and you think they're dead.
And then flop.
And then like you just poke them like, no, they have got two more flaps left in them.
That's the magic of, I think that's Eric Fountain's boarding plus your voice plus some design magic from Joe Pitt, who designed Mermando. I feel like this episode's legacy was just recently secured. Guillermo del Toro just won the Oscar for Shape of Water, and he retweeted a tweet somebody did saying, like, with a screenshot of this saying, Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro from Mermando, and he retweeted it.
Go, Mabel, go! We can't all be saved. Oh.
We're gonna get you home!
Hand over the pool supply!
We were really trying to figure out how we could make a chase work. We're like, I guess he's hucking water balloons and
oh, that's some good 3D cart work.
How do we make a third act out of this thing?
Yeah.
I will say, as much as you guys are bagging on elements of this episode, that I'm teaching this animation class right now to 8th and 9th graders, and I was getting no respect from them. And then when I told them that I was the voice of Mermando, like I told them I wrote on Gravity Falls, I told them the episodes I'd done, and then they were just kind of like stone faced. And then I was like, I was the voice of Mermando, and they're like, you were the voice of Mermando. And so all of a sudden, I got all this respect now. So.
Did you do the, well? That you could do the voice for them whenever they're like, you know, getting out of line.
That and that was a little too far. I did it, and they were all just like crickets. Like, there's no reaction. They're just like, wait, what was that? That's not what Mermando sounds like. Like it just didn't
it's
work.
Different coming out of a man.
Yeah, a man with a beard in his
30s. Human three-dimensional man. This entire concept of. One of my favorite concepts in this episode is that, like, we're constantly focusing in these episodes, any episode of Gravity Falls, about setup and payoff.
Yeah.
Which is like, if a joke, if a joke can be something that rewards your attention from earlier, if the pieces can fit together, like, I was never super sold on this idea that I guess Dipper's a lifeguard this week. It's not something he's ever wanted to be, but the fact that he has to use his lifeguard skills to do reverse CPR on a merman, I was like, now it works. Like that
this
was what was necessary.
This is the grossest thing I think we ever put in any show.
I mean, he's just doing reverse CPR on
he's spewing water into a
on a merman
another kid's mouth. It's disgusting.
You know, one man's disgusting is another man's greatest episode ever. This is our executive pointed out that he could have just thrown him in the water, and I had a choice between cutting the reverse CPR and adding that joke, and instead I just added the "why didn't you throw me into the water" joke.
That's always a good strategy. It's like, you know, if there's something wrong with the show, if you point it out, you know, the audience is like, okay, these people aren't stupid. They notice too.
Sometimes they're forgiving. And this was,
yeah,
I think, in this instance,
depends on how many times you go to that well.
Yeah, if the comedy like is worth it, then people forgive it.
Yeah.
We never did come back to Mermando. We suggest that he's been married to an undersea, manatee. Is it manatee queen to prevent some sort of civil war?
We wanted him to be happy.
The families.
At least if you made him like a sympathetic character, then it seemed like Mabel's relationship was like worthwhile, as opposed to just like the guy of the week. You know,
we always underestimated that we'd have these characters who we'd think of in 5 minutes, and then we'd struggle with an episode that never quite felt like it was working, and we'd look at that character, and all we'd remember is the pain. And then audiences would fall in love with these characters.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, oh, like, we have to flesh out that cynicism. Like, we have to, like, detox from all the memories of all the drafts we had to do to get that character likable and, like, you know, like, embrace the fact. Like, Pacifica was a character me and Mike just every time we wrote her, she was so unlikable.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
audiences were like, no, we see something in that. And it was like season two was like, okay, let's try to make this character sweet, you know?
And we would always make fun of these characters sometimes, be like, oh yeah, I'm sure everyone's gonna be clamoring for more Lee and Nate and Thompson, but like oddly kids like Lee and Nate and Thompson. No one was clamoring for more Mr. Pulchek, to be fair.
This This gag where he eats the whistle might be the weirdest thing that happened in this series. Like, it's so outside of our normal style.
Is that some Aaron Springer stuff to, there, too, as well, eating the whistle?
I think Aaron, sure. I think Fountain boarded that one as well. A lot of standout moments from Eric Fountain in this episode. Inflatable ducks unite. That's a Matt Brawley drawing that you...
Yeah.
Do you have, Matt, I'm curious, as the voice of Mermando, what is your headcanon for what happens to Mermando?
Right now, like after he swims away?
Yeah, what did you imagine?
I felt like he made it to the ocean at some point, and then he, you know, got pulled onto like an oil rig accidentally, and then just started working for an oil company for big oil.
They accepted him as one of their own.
Just became a blue collar voter, like interested. Oh
no! Sadly, he's
safety.
Like, yeah, he goes down and he's like at Deepwater Horizon or whatever. He's like under there, like fixing the oil leaks and stuff. Like he runs the webcam. You know that they when there's oil spills,
he's
always
got
like a webcam on
head.
An oil spill.
What's that Mermando movie with the genetically engineered super sharks? Is it what Deep Blue Sea?
Oh yeah, yeah, it is Deep Blue Sea.
It's just that, but with
a big thumbs up.
Gideon's American flag. Shorts, such a good choice. I don't know if that was. I think that might have been our designer. I think that might have been a designer, a board artist who came up with that. But it just
it was a delightful.
Just makes him even more obnoxious. Yeah, and this beautiful end credits done by Eric.
We should add the like Sarah McLachlan when You Still Love Me playing or whatever.
Yeah, this is just so well done.
He's all American. That's the important part.